International House of Horrors.
Valued guests, and welcome back to the International House of Horrors podcast, your sanctuary spooky for all things terrible, horrible, brutal, bloody, gory, and the macabre. I am one of your curators here at the house, Joe Merle.
And I'm the other one. I'm Josh. Hi, Joe.
Hello, Josh. What's going on,
back,
man?
Back to normal. I'm not hungover anymore. And I'm really excited for this episode because I watched lots of movies this week, and I'm really excited to talk about a few of them, and especially one that you watched as well this week.
Yes, you had brought some other stuff to the table, but unfortunately, I didn't have time to watch a ton this week. I did manage to squeeze in a few things, but I had planned. I moved everything like around, took everything down, and repainted the whole living room, the whole hallway, put some carpet down the back stairs, painted one of the ceilings in one of the bathrooms. So there was a lot of projects going on, yeah. So I didn't have a lot of downtime. I was fortunate, though. Phil came down. Most people would know Phil, at least who listened to my other show, know Phil as the other co-host. He came down and helped me out with a lot of stuff, which was super cool. So I am excited, though. You said you had watched one thing in particular. So if anyone hasn't guessed, our main topic, we'll get there, but our main topic of the day is going to be just some stuff we've been watching recently. But before we get to that main topic, we got to start this thing off like we do every week with an episode of The Twilight Zone. So today we're on episode 34 from season one. It's called The After Hours. It was written by Rod Serling and directed by Douglas Hayes. I think that's how you'd say it anyway, H-E-Y-E-S. Hayes?
I'd say so. Hayes, like the... Didn't he write another... didn't he do another episode before?
I think he's done a couple of them.
I feel like we talked about his name before, yeah. Or at least... Well, Hayes is, I guess... I remember talking about the Hayes Code last time.
Right.
There was a Hayes involved in something, so I don't know, yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's it. That's what we'll go with for now. But this originally aired on June 10th, 1960... And we're getting right close. I think we've got two episodes left of season one before we get into my personal favorite season of The Twilight Zone, season two. But so let's open this thing up with the narration. And although this narration is broken into two, I'm just going to read it all as one because the break was really short. There wasn't a lot of action that happened in the break. So here we go. Opening narration, The After Hours. Express elevator to the ninth floor of a department store. Carrying Miss Marcia White on a most prosaic, ordinary run-of-the-mill errand. Miss Marcia White on the ninth floor, specialties department, looking for a gold thimble. The odds are that she'll find it. But there are even better odds that she'll find something else. Because this isn't just a department store. This happens to be the Twilight Zone.
Now he's just doing it every week now, doing the Twilight Zone at beginning and the end.
Yeah, yeah, kind of adding it in. And I don't know if they did that purposefully, you know, to let people, even though I assume people knew what they were watching, but maybe if you jumped in, you know, halfway through, you might, I don't know. I don't know why they changed it up, but.
I think maybe it's just because it is kind of cool to have like this whole text always lead into the Twilight Zone, like. We can now start looking for how is he going to lead it into, he's going to the Twilight Zone this week. So maybe it's like a running gag, basically.
Yeah, that's fair.
Once again, we have the shorter opening where it's just like the eye and he's saying like, next up, the Twilight Zone. And that's basically it.
Yeah, it's real quick. And it's, if reading it, I think it was last week, was... It only lasted for like four episodes or something like that. It didn't go on for a long time, which I think is kind of cool. But so we've got our lead, Anne Francis, who I don't know a ton about her. I was going to see if I could pull anything up. I don't know if it looks like she did a lot of, you know, like Hitchcock's Presents. She was in The Twilight Zone in a couple episodes. She shows up in another one as well. Jess Bell, she'll show up later on, but it looks like she had a lot of her success in TV more than, you know, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., Rawhide. I'm trying to just kind of cruise through this really quick to see if there's anything else.
But also, couple Forbidden movie things Planet. Like she was.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's her
Planet.
Best known. Yeah, yeah, probably her one of her biggest roles. I love Forbidden Planet. Such a such cool movie.
I haven't seen it.
Of course you haven't. You haven't seen anything yet, Josh. I've got a really cool Forbidden Planet T-shirt. I know you know the robot from Forbidden Planet, though. You've seen like the poster and stuff,
I've seen
right?
the poster, yeah. Just haven't seen a movie, yeah.
Yeah, that robot is very, very iconic. So we open up with her, and she's the one, as we're getting the opening narration, who is riding this elevator. He sets us right up. Like, she's going in an elevator. We see her in the department store talking to people. Hey, I'm looking for a gift. And someone tells her, you got to go up to the ninth floor. That's where you're going to find your gift at. She's like,
first she's,
or they
she's
tell
just,
her the specialties?
Well, no, she's first told she needs to go into another department, and then she goes to the elevator, and there's all these people waiting in front of the elevator when there's suddenly a second elevator appears, and there's a guy inside, and he says, you need to get to the ninth floor. And yeah, he also says, like, specialties or something.
Yeah, you need to get up there, and so she, but I think even inside the elevator, it only showed eight floors, right?
Yeah, it only had eight floors. And then I wanted to ask, I guess R stands for the roof floor. And we don't have that over here in Germany, but like...
Yeah, I don't know. Normally a lot of elevators now, maybe back then, but a lot of elevators will not take you to the roof.
Yeah.
Like you need like a special service elevator or something like that. Somebody who's got a key that takes you up there, because you can't just have people going up to the roof. You know, that's I mean, the liability of that alone.
Exactly.
Even if someone's just going up there to hang out, you got to worry about people throwing themselves off or doing some dumb shit up there.
Or throwing other things off, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
It's also already dangerous.
That's true.
So the elevator says it's eight, like on the outside, it says eight floors, then the R, which I guess stands for roof, and then
it goes
even further over the roof, basically. And on the inside, it has the nine buttons, though. Like, it has number nine, so that's where she gets off, and it's a completely empty room, like giant department store floor, just empty, nothing there, other than
woman. There's like countertops and things like that and display cases, so it looks like an abandoned department store.
Yeah,
and
everything's empty.
And she's already suspicious, though, going up. She's like, well, I'm getting great service, you know, all those people are waiting and I get a whole elevator to myself. And he acts a little bit weird as well. So you're right, she goes up completely empty and there's one woman standing there, and she goes over there. She's like, well, I'm looking for a present for my mother. I'm looking for a golden thimble. And she's like, well, what do you know? That's the only thing we have. And so she ends up getting this thimble. And on her way out, she turns and even tells the woman, she's like, this is really fucking weird what's happening. Like, I come up here and the only thing you have is the one thing I need. You know, it's super bizarre. And we already watched the episode, right? Of the guy with the what you need. Yeah, we did, with the matches and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of the same thing. Like, it's exactly what she needs, but there's only the one. And that's
the only thing. Yeah. And then that saleswoman calls her by her name, first by her first name, then by her second name, by her last name, even though the question Marsha was asking was like, how do you even know my name?
Yeah.
She's, oh, sorry, Mrs. White.
Right. And so she's really confused now, heads back down and notices a scratch on the thimble. And she's like, oh, shit, like, this is bad. So who do I got to talk to? She talks to one department. They send her over to the complaints department. And once she gets over there, that's when he's like the store manager, I would think, starts getting very confused by all of this stuff. And maybe he's the floor manager, and then he talks to the actual store manager.
Yeah, I feel like Mr. Armbruster is like the, the complaints manager. Like, he's, she's in the complaints department. And he's there expecting her and talking to her, and then going to the manager, yeah. And talking to him, can you talk to her? She doesn't listen to me. I told her there is no ninth floor.
Yeah, and that's the big thing, is they're having a conversation and he's like, well, that doesn't sound too bad. Like, get her a replacement thing. And he's like, but she said she got it from the ninth floor. She went up to the ninth floor and got this gold thimble. And so they go to talk to her, and she's like, I swear I got it on the ninth floor. They ask her, do you got a receipt? She's like, no, I paid cash, a 20 and a five. And, oh, there's the woman right over there, right? I can see her. And she's wearing, you know, clothes that would be easily identified for the audience. You know, she's got like a big collared jacket, something that's easy to look at and or easy to identify. And somebody goes over there in perfect timing. Somebody goes over there, picks this woman up, turns her around, and then we learn that it's a mannequin. And now things are getting really weird, and you're like, okay, what's going on? And I love this episode. Every time I watch this episode, I think it's great. But and so that even though, you know, rewatch as many times I've seen it, maybe it's because I've seen it so many times, a lot of it seems like so clear what's going on, but I still feel like it's a great story and a great payoff at the end, especially the implication that Serling gives us with the closing narration.
Yeah, and actually, I gotta say, though, watching it, this was one of the few episodes where I had no idea where this was going all the way through.
Oh, see, and that's awesome. See, and yeah, that's the way I felt the first time I'd watched it. I had guesses and stuff like that, and that's why I say maybe I've just seen it too many times now where yeah. I'm like, oh, it's clear as day, because this is one I watch quite a bit. I do enjoy this episode. So... Now we've got, I can't remember how she gets into the...
She passes out.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
She passes out because
the shock.
She turned out to be a mannequin. Yeah.
Yeah. So from the shock of seeing the mannequin that she swore was the helper at the store, you're right. She passes out. And then how does she end up in the... She ends up in a closet somehow?
Yeah. I feel like she... She just wakes up there, like she passed out, and then the store manager says,
"That's yeah, where just, she just wakes
put
up."
Put her there and give her once she wakes up, give her the stuff, and then she'll leave.
Get her out of here.
Yeah, and then she wakes up in the closet. Yeah,
right, and that's when she starts hearing the voices. And I never noticed before, but I'm like, "Holy shit! Did the Brady Bunch steal this?" When you get all those voices like Marsha, 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 Marsha. You know, it's like it's what you see in the, I don't know if you've ever watched the old Brady Bunch TV show.
Sadly, I haven't.
I doubt it. Yeah, I was going to say I doubt it. There's a lot of things you need to watch before you get to that. But so she starts hearing all these voices, and then she recognizes one of them that was the elevator guy that she had seen earlier. And she now tries to run. She's going hysterical, going crazy. And she realizes that, I don't know how quick she realizes it, but that the ninth floor is just like full of mannequins. And that's which is weird though that, no, they did say it was just a storage area. They didn't say the ninth floor didn't exist, right?
No, they said the ninth floor didn't exist. I think like that's like, yeah, I don't know. Now that you say it, yeah, maybe. But they said it doesn't exist.
Maybe she wasn't really going to the ninth floor. Maybe it was a different place in the store, yeah. And that's just what the mannequins call it, you know, the ninth floor.
Yeah.
And so she comes to this realization. I think it's a really cool payoff, too, that she is a mannequin and that once a month, one of the mannequins gets to live a normal human life. And then they have to come back, though. And so she had forgotten that she was a mannequin. Essentially, she forgot that she was a mannequin. And they help her realize it, though, not even in a bad way. They're just like, hey, you know, you remember, this is how we do things. You've been human. You got your chance to go out and stretch your legs. And one of the other mannequins is like, well, you already cut into a day of my time. You know, you got to make sure you come back on time. But there's no real, like, evil or nefarious intentions in any of it. It's just kind of what they do. It's their process.
Yeah, although they do it in a really scary way. Like, she could have just, when she first got to the ninth floor, just say, no, I'm not giving you anything. You need to come back to your mannequin. And then maybe she would have been not as shocked and not passed out.
Yeah,
shock.
But what would have been more shocking? A weird, empty room or someone telling you're a mannequin who comes alive once a month and you need to come back? You know, if she had truly forgotten... I feel like she would have been more in shock. She would have fucking ran as fast as possible. Like, hey, you're really a doll. You need to come back.
Yeah, that is true. Now that you say it like that, yeah.
But it's really cool. And, you know, they kind of talk back and forth. Like, it's so amazing. If only we could be humans all the time. but we don't have that ability, so we're going to be humans for just 30 days and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's really
And then we get the final shot. Yeah, and then we get the final shot of her as a mannequin. Of course, you know, you got to see that she's back doing her thing, being a mannequin. And so we get that shot, and then we lead into the closing narration. So let's do this real quick.
Which is all over a close-up of her face, basically. And yes. The mannequin looks really a lot like her.
It looked good. Yeah, it looked really good. All right, here we go. Marcia White in her normal and natural state. A wooden lady with a painted face who once a month out of the year takes on the characteristics of someone normal as flesh and blood as you and I. But it makes you wonder, doesn't it? Just how normal are we? Just who are the people we nod our hellos to as we pass on the street? A rather good question to ask, particularly in the Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
But I like this idea. I've always liked this episode just as a story. I think it's a really cool story.
Yeah.
And it plays out really well. Like you said, it kind of keeps you guessing up until the end. But
you won't see coming at first watch.
Right. You really don't see the fact that she was this thing the whole time. But I think I appreciate it so much more now over the years, many times I've seen it, is it causes the viewer, if you're really kind of digging into it and take the time to ask the question, you know, how much of our lives are we just kind of floating through and not really doing anything? Like, we might be alive, but you could almost be mannequin-like in nature. Yeah. Where you're not aware, you're not enjoying it. You're just kind of going through the motions day after day. You're almost a wooden figure in a living, breathing world if you become lost in this kind of monotony or rat race of the world where you're not even truly alive. You're just kind of getting by. And this, you know, causes us to think on that and then say, okay, you know, you have those moments in life. Somebody might say it was a vacation. Somebody might say it was, they might be, you know, a marathon runner, or they might do mountain biking, like downhill mountain biking or something like that. You have those few moments of truly being alive, but other times you could be just kind of passing by, which isn't what life should be. And, you know, Serling is great at that. He was so introspective when it came to the very nature of life and existence and the short finite amount of time we have, especially for him, man. He died so young. But I think I don't know if he struggled with that or if it was something that he just liked to explore over the course of his life. But this one to me is one of those episodes that's deeper than just the surface level, which he was so good at. He would tell you these amazing stories that you could take at the surface level, but then at the same time could have much deeper meaning in there as well.
Yeah, and that's what we love about the Twilight Zone, and that's why I can't wait to talk through all of them. Like, we're almost through season one, and I haven't seen a bad episode yet. Like, there were some that weren't as good, but there wasn't one where I said, I wish I wouldn't have watched that.
But they're not bad, right? And so it's a really good one. I encourage everybody to check that one out. And if you are following along with us, just as a note, next week is The Mighty Casey. That's going to be next week's episode, The Mighty Casey. So we'll get to that. And it's, you know, a baseball one based on the poem Casey at Bat. I don't know if you're familiar with that
never
poem.
Very,
very. Fuck, you never heard of anything.
Well, I'm from Germany. We don't have baseball over here.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Even though I've been seeing a lot of Germany in the news lately, because I get most of my news from BBC. And that crazy stuff you guys had happen last week was sad, man.
Yeah.
It was I didn't realize you had such like militant alt-right politics over there. It seems it's scary.
It's kind of starting. Like, that's the problem. Like, we didn't have it for, we had always had like an alt-right party, but they were like, they were the bad guys. Like, no one voted for them unless a few people who were on that side. But for the most part, yeah, they came back in the last few years, and it is scary. But
yeah, I know in the news is always sensationalized to a little bit. Like, Germany is a huge place, but for any of these type of events to happen is always so tragic.
Yeah,
So, but we're not here to talk about German politics.
Yeah, let's talk about something fun. By the way, before we forget it, and it leads right into our main topic, because like we said, the main topic is going to be, we're going to be talking about movies we have been watching recently. And I've watched a few movies because we got an email last week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because last episode, we talked about like movie recommendations or movies that are not talked about enough. And we got an email of by Michael Stromer. He's like a friend of the show.
Yeah.
And he sent in a few more movies that that he thinks are not talked about enough. And I think we should just talk about them really quick. And I watched two of them because I had seen almost all of them. I hadn't seen three of them, and I managed to put two of them in and watch them this week.
Why don't you read the whole list of what he sent, and then we'll get into the ones you've seen and all that stuff. You know, go through them one at a time, just so we can make sure we hit them all.
Okay, yeah. So, he wrote Joe and Josh, a couple movies to the list in no particular order. The Eyes of My Mother, 2016. The Greasy Strangler, 2016. Attack the Block, 2011. Byzantium, 2012. Spider Baby, 1967. And A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. Thanks for doing what you do, Stromer.
Nice.
Yeah, and so let's first get the ones off the list that we both already saw, like The Greasy Strangler. You already laughed. you have more than just seen that movie.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough, Phil and I got to do an interview with Michael St. Michaels, who is the star of The Greasy Strangler. And it's one, every time I see it or hear someone talk about it, it makes me just want to watch it again. Because it's it's such a weird, bizarre, yet wholly original idea. It's, you know, it's like nothing you've ever seen. It really is like nothing you've ever seen.
It's completely crazy. And it's completely fucked up. And I am still kind of sad because when Michael and I went to the first Splatterday Night Fever, where they showed horror movies, they showed five horror movies in the evening. And we stayed for four and then left because we were both super tired and it was like 4 a.m. in the morning. And we missed out on The Greasy Strangler.
Ah, that would have been so cool to see on the big screen.
Yes. But since I watched it on DVD, talked to friends about it. Like, I have a few friends who've seen it and love it as well. And it is amazing.
it really is. And it's such a crazy concept and so just physically gross. Like, there's so much in that movie that's just, oh, it's so nasty. And I can't remember what they kept saying, like hootie tootie disco cutie or hottie tottie disco hottie or something like that. Yeah. But there's so much weird dialogue between Michael St. Michaels and his kid, and I can't remember the actor, the kid's name, but I've seen him in some other things, and he always plays kind of that really weird type of character. But
although he lost lots of weight, like he was in Under the Silver Lake. I almost didn't recognize him. I only recognized him because his voice, his monotone sound of the voice, really always gets me and reminds me of him.
Yeah, I'm trying to look real quick to see if I can pull up his name. Sky Elabar.
Yeah,
he's good, and he's been in a couple things. He was in that an evening with Beverly Loughlin, which I still haven't had the chance to see, that I do want to check out because I like everybody else in that movie. Maybe he wasn't. I'm trying to look through. Yeah, you're right. Under the Silver Lake. He was in Candy Corn. That was just last year. He's got quite a few credits. So, but he's a lot of fun.
Yeah, but really, like you said, the star of the movie is really St.
Michael. Michael St. Michaels.
St. Michael. Yeah, his name alone is already crazy. But yeah, he is amazing in that movie. And bullshit artist. We don't even need to talk about the plot. The plot is actually the title. It's The Greasy Strangler. And we're trying to find out who he is and stop him, I guess.
And we should talk about his day job. He does a disco walking tour. Yeah. Where sometimes he's wearing chaps with his enormous member just hanging out.
It is amazing.
All right. So what were the other ones on the...
He wrote Attack the Block and even wrote in with a question mark horror. And you said, is it horror? I haven't seen it yet, but I didn't watch it. So your quick thoughts on Attack the Block?
I would not consider Attack the Block a horror movie, only because, and I'm pulling it up real quick. I will say, though, it's a great movie. It's a great movie, but I don't know if I'd call it horror. And you've got a early John Boyega, which is always awesome. You've got Jodie Whittaker in there, who is the current doctor for Doctor Who. So if anybody's a fan of Jodie Whittaker, But to me, it's much more sci-fi. It's science fiction, you know. And that's a fine line because horror and sci-fi have always kind of butted right up against each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're two that are so closely tied, but it really is to me an alien invasion movie, but a really good alien invasion movie. And so it's kind of, you know, kids versus aliens. It's one that I highly recommend. Like I say, check it out as soon as you get a chance. But would I call it horror? For me, no. But for somebody else, maybe. I don't know. Maybe you can, you know, when you get a chance to watch it, you can follow back up and say, hey, yes, I would call this horror. No, I might not call this horror. But it's really good, man. It's really good.
And I will watch it, like, just to get a whole list of movies that he sent us to have, to be able to say I've seen them all.
And it's I want to say it was made in the UK, and you kind of have it was unique in that you don't normally see kind of like inner city, like urban kids against aliens. You know, aliens for some reason tend to happen out in some farm somewhere. But this one is kind of like gang level kids who end up against these aliens. It's good, man. It's really good.
Yeah,
so definitely check it out.
Then one that I guess is in general not talked about enough, but I'd say we've basically talked it to death already, is Spider Baby. It's not one we would bring up in a movie that's not talked about because
we talk about it all the time.
Because it is one of the greatest movies ever. And
I mean, it might be one of my top 10 horror movies of all time. Because since I watched it the first time, which was more recently, you know, within the last probably 5 years, I've watched it probably a dozen times since then. Because the beauty is it's on YouTube, it's on like Tubi,
it's
anywhere where you
can
get, anywhere you can get like public domain type movies, it's there. And for being a movie that's that old, it's still really scary. And I think it's one of Lon Chaney Jr.'s best performances. Like you get to see him be emotional when he has that emotional scene where he's talking, when he realizes there's going to be more people coming. Like, I'm sorry, but they're going to keep coming after everything that's happened here. And you see him realize that he has to do what he's got to do. It's just, it's a 100% absolute must watch.
Yeah. And I think that scene, I've heard that they actually like gave him a standing ovation after he was done. And some people cried because it was so emotional.
It's good, man. It really is. Yeah,
but it's not one we need to talk about because
we've done like whole episodes about it. Yeah.
And the last one that I hadn't seen when we got the email is A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, which that's a movie that's not did I say hadn't seen? I had seen that movie.
You had seen that one. Yeah. And I feel like it got a little bit of buzz when it first came out because it's a cool fucking vampire movie. It's a really cool movie, and it's a unique vampire movie, even though I think they filmed it in L.A., but it's supposed to be...
I think it's Iranian. Like, they shot it in Iranian or something.
Or they shot it in Iranian, but did it in L.A. But you get a kind of a cool take that we don't see often on the vampire story, and the lead in that, I don't remember her name, but she did a fantastic job. And I want to say this came around the same time as Let Me In. Were they pretty close?
A few years later, like it was 2014. Yeah. I think Let Me In was 2010.
So that's what I'm saying, within like 5 years of each other.
Okay, yeah.
And so we started getting these vampire stories that weren't, you know, big scary vampires in the shadows, you know, hunting people down and stuff like that. It was much more street level. And like this is what it might be. Interview with a Vampire did a good job of showing the dark side of being a vampire. Like living forever might not always be the best thing. These two movies showed us how does a vampire navigate day-to-day life? You know, what does that look like in the real world? You know, not in a huge castle or in a coven somewhere surrounded by lavish things all over the place. This is just a girl living a regular life who happens to be a vampire.
Yeah, and it was, in general, like, it was shot in Iranian. It was in black and white. It was like, this movie wasn't made to be talked about, really. Like,
it wasn't.
Yeah, but it is really good, and I'd recommend it to anyone. And also, the same director, Anna-Lily Amirpour, she also made a movie that we both, one of the few movies we really disagree on, is The Bad Batch.
Yeah.
That I really,
you really
love,
liked it.
You...
I did not.
Yeah.
I just didn't see it. It wasn't, the pacing wasn't there for me. Like, there were moments that I liked, but it never felt like it really did what I expected it to do, and I was not a fan.
Yeah, and I was just into it all throughout, and I had so much fun with it. But yeah, that leaves us to with two movies that I hadn't seen when we got the email, but I have seen now, and leads us right into our main topic of movies we've been watching. So how do we want to do this? Should we go through?
We'll just
those
go
two
back
first?
And forth. Yeah, we'll do those two first, and then we'll just do a back and forth.
Okay, awesome. So the first one on the list is from 2016, The Eyes of My Mother, which is, it's amazing.
it really is. It is. And that's another one where I was fortunate enough to be able to interview the lead actress from that one, Kika Margulies, who was absolutely wonderful. She was great. The interview was a ton of fun. But that movie, I think it just showed up on Netflix one day. And that's how I ran into it. Like, Phil and I doing our show, we saw the trailer before it was released. And the trailer, I want to say, didn't give you a lot. We were both like, what is going on in this thing? And then I got a chance to see it and absolutely just loved it. But I want to know what you think.
I can only agree. I absolutely loved it. It's great. It's like I had no idea what was going on. I didn't know anything about the movie, really. I heard the name a lot, The Eyes of My Mother. And I always expected it to be like a ghost story or something for some reason. And then watching it, it is not a ghost story.
Not at all.
And it's just completely fucked up. It's in black and white. It's beautifully shot. It's
beautiful black and white. Beautiful black and white.
Really well acted by all people, especially like the lead actress. Like you said, she is great in this.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just completely fucked up, and it's only like 74 minutes long, I think, or something. But yeah, it's
yeah, it's
I don't
short
even know what to say.
It's, you know, and it's all very remote. It all takes place at, you know, this one farmhouse, and I don't want to say too much because I don't want to give too much of this away, because it is a movie I feel like that's not talked about too much, but I don't know. It kind of deals with trauma. It deals with the effects of trauma over the long term. And it's also super like violent at a couple points. Like, it gets really intense and really crazy.
Yeah.
So it's
almost over the top violent. Like, it's really fucked up.
Yeah. Super, super crazy. And it's just really good, man. It's, I think it's Portuguese, right? It was Portuguese?
Well, it is in English.
But I think just, the movie was, or maybe not.
It might be.
I don't know where they made it. Yeah.
They talk in different English and in different languages. Let's see.
I thought there was some other language in there.
Yeah, they talk in, let me see if I can find it real quick. They talk in another language as well. Portuguese, yeah.
Okay, yeah. But oh, yeah, I'm looking at the storyline and it says, formerly a surgeon in Portugal. Okay, I knew there was something there, but it's been a while since I've watched it. I do need to rewatch it soon. I've seen it a couple times, and like you said, it's a really quick burn. It's only like 76 minutes. So you can, you know, throw it on, watch it, and have a good time with it.
Yeah, for sure. And it's kind of crazy because that director, Nicolas Pesquet, I guess, he made the new Grudge movie that's really bad.
Oh, that was the same guy?
Yeah, that is the same guy. And it's kind of crazy. But also, he was born in 1990. So he made that when he was 26 and made the Grudge now with around 30. So that's still great. And he made Piercing, which I feel like maybe you've told me about. Piercing,
I haven't,
from 2018?
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but it's been on my list for a while.
Oh, okay.
I don't even know if it's available to watch anyway, about the guy that wants to kill a hooker. So yeah, I'll have to see if maybe I can find that somewhere to watch. But I have seen it. After I watched Eyes of My Mother, I kind of followed the guy a little bit as he was doing different things, but I never got around to seeing it.
Okay.
But yeah, it looks good.
Yeah, and so that movie, though, is great. Like, The Grudge is not good. Don't watch it, but... The Eyes of My Mother is amazing. And the other movie Stroma sent us was Byzantium from 2012, which falls right in between A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night and Let Me In, the two other vampire movies you talked about. And it's similar in that it's also about vampires kind of living their day-to-day lives. And
I haven't seen this one.
You haven't?
No.
Oh, I thought you had seen this one.
No.
Oh. Well, it is great. It's what's the name again?
How do you spell it?
Byzantium.
It's ridiculous.
With Saoirse Ronan and Gemma Arterton as two vampire sisters. It's a British production about these two vampire sisters who are living their lives, like traveling around the world, in England, and meeting people. It also stars Caleb Landry Jones, who I always love in movies.
And yeah, I'm trying to see if I can find. See if it's streaming anywhere, but
What's really interesting is it's directed by Neil Jordan, who also made Interview with a Vampire, which I didn't like as much.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I like Interview with a Vampire. I'm a fan. But yeah, it looks like it's available. Like, you can buy it and rent it and stuff, so I'll try and find it. I'll see if I can find it.
You should see it. It's really good. Like, Saoirse Ronan is always good in everything she does.
Yeah, she's very good. Is it Saoirse or Saoirse? I always said it was Saoirse. Is how you say it?
Yeah, Saoirse.
Okay.
Yeah, I've learned that over the time she got famous. Something. It's fun to know she's Saoirse. Saoirse Ronan.
Yeah, because it's spelled so differently.
Yeah, it's Irish.
Okay.
These Irish people always spell things differently when they say it. But yeah, the movie is really good and also much more violent than you would expect, especially because...
Maybe I did watch this. Now that I'm reading the storyline, maybe I don't know. I'd have to watch the trailer. I'm not going to do it right now, but fuck, I feel like I did watch this. I don't know.
It's great. It's just, you should, if you haven't, and if you have, and
if
totally
I don't remember,
it, you should rewatch it.
Yeah. Okay.
Because yeah, it is really, really good.
All right.
So
yeah,
that was all that Stroma sent us. So now we can just go through the movies we've been watching. And since I've already talked about two, how about you go on?
Yeah. So I didn't watch as much this week. I've got a few. I probably got and I went back a little bit like the past couple of weeks. The one I want to start with, it was actually from, let's see, what did I watch it? Like 3 weeks ago. But I watched it after watching Castle Rock season 2. And I went back and watched.
It's out in Germany now, so I got
it.
I still haven't finished season 1.
Season 2 was good. But it made me want to go back and revisit Misery. So I went back, watched Stephen King's Misery. Phil and I chatted about it a little bit. But it is... It might be top 2 Stephen King adaptations.
Probably,
that movie is just so unbelievably... I shouldn't even say that movie. Kathy Bates is so unbelievably terrifying in that movie.
She really is.
She really is. You know, James Caan plays a great opposite her, but she's really the one that just drives that story home, and it's terrifying. Like, it really is. It's terrifying, and because it's something that really could happen. You know, the circumstances that get him to the house, you know, seem a little bit kind of crazy, but the actual events in the house, I feel like, could take place.
And even the circumstances, like, Stephen King got the idea after he had a car crash that almost killed him. And so...
I was talking to Michael, and I thought the car crash was after.
As far as I know, it was before.
Let me see. Stephen King car crash. We'll see what comes up.
As far as I know...
On June 1999... So
really?
Distracted. Yeah. So yeah, the car crash happened in 99.
I always had in my head that was like inspiration.
Well, this is the one that he was walking on the shoulder. That's when he got hit. When he was hit by the car. And so now let me see if he was in. No, everything just says is when he was actually hit by the car in 99. Yeah, Michael's the one who corrected me on that. Michael's a big Stephen King fan. He's a he's a really big fan, but even still, I mean, Stephen King is such a, you know, I wouldn't put it past the man to have been driven by or driving through a bad snowstorm, saw a car on the side of the road, and he's just like, gee, what could happen next?
Yeah, that's typically what he does.
Yeah, and then formulate this whole idea. Like, what's okay, now let's see just where these characters take me. But regardless, you know, I think it's something probably he has had to deal with over the course of his life. You know, very obsessive fans.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, years ago back then when fans, once they found out where you were, you know, you had, I feel like you don't have as many stalkers now, or maybe we just don't see it. You see more stalking on people, and this is, I don't know if it's good, bad, or indifferent. People are able to stalk now on social media.
Yeah, They don't have to get to their house to get close to you.
Right, because so many people on social media reveal so many pieces of their intimate life. Yeah. You know, oh, look at what I'm eating for dinner, or this is what I had for a snack, these are my two dogs, without actually having to reveal where they live. But the movie itself, it's a great story, it's a great book, and the... I don't know. It's just, as a horror movie, it's just all there, man. It's all there.
It is amazing. And it's Kathy Bates even win the Oscar for best?
Yeah. She won best performance for an actress.
Yeah, because it really was, like, still to this day, when I see Kathy Bates, I'm scared of her. She did other roles, but I'll always be scared of her because of that performance.
Annie Wilkes. So that's my first one up is Misery.
Okay, so let's see. I watched another movie after you told me to watch it last episode, and that's Street Trash. That movie.
What did you think of Street Trash?
It's amazing, and also so much like the title. It's trash, but it's so much fun. It's fun to just sit down and watch and like. Have it on the side, maybe. What look every now and then when someone drinks the drink and starts melting. There's so much shit going on in between and so much crazy. That whole movie is crazy, and it's like one of those movies where you're like, "How did this get made?" Like the whole question is, who put money into this?
Who is the one that wanted? I mean, it was, you know, people were doing a lot of cocaine in the '80s, in the '80s. And Street Trash, like I had said last week, though, it is in a lot of ways kind of offensive. You know, it kind of paints the homeless population in a very, very bad light. But it's, and you know, I think what always worked for me with Street Trash is the super bright colors when they're melting, like violent yellow, like screaming yellow, like awful blue, just these horrible melting colors. But it really is. You know, it's like Chopping Mall. It's one of those 80s movies that's just so over the top and bizarre, but still so much fun. It really is so much fun.
And it feels just so much like a trauma movie. Like this, I'm wondering that Lloyd Kaufman didn't have anything to do with this, because this is something right up his alley that he would do.
Yeah, and it's a blast, man. It's a great time.
Yeah, and it's completely
so I'm really
YouTube.
Happy you watched it. Is it? Oh,
yeah,
nice.
It is.
Yeah, I'm really happy that you got a chance to watch it, because I think it popped up for me on Prime one day and I didn't even know what it was. And then I just threw it on and I was really happy that I watched it because it's so stupid and ridiculous. But it's cool.
I watched it right after we got... Well, no, I tried watching it right after we got done recording, but I was too hungover. But I finished it the next day.
Yeah, it's not a movie to watch when you're hungover. Yeah. It's rough.
Not at all.
I was going to go back to last week, but I talked about those two and neither of those were really good. So, I do want to say to you though, excuse me, that even though it's not a horror movie, and I kind of mentioned it to you, but I want to mention it again because I really want people to watch it, is that new McKay movie, First Love. Really good.
He'll always have a spot on this podcast because it's McKay and he's the best.
Yeah, and he's done so many good horror movies. You know, that's another one people don't talk about. I feel like the whole series, a lot of them were really good. Did you watch Masters of Horror that came out?
No, I've seen a few episodes. What I don't think I've seen the Mikkei one, though.
It's Imprint.
Oh, yes, I have seen it, yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool. That was a good one. But no, First Love is much more his, you know, crime, Yakuza type crime movie.
He loves doing those as well.
He really does. This one doesn't have any of the kind of over the top McKay stuff you'd expect. It's got the really good fight sequences, some really good, like, you know, bloody battles and things like that. But as far as the story is concerned, it's pretty straightforward. It's There's nothing there that's too off the wall. It's really cool though.
Okay.
So all right. So I'm just gonna do the four that I watched this week. One of them might have been last week. No, they were all four this week. The first one is a documentary that finally showed up on Hulu. And so I don't know, you know, could you call it a horror movie, even though it has to do with a subject matter that a lot of people find terrifying? And I watched the Wrinkles the Clown documentary. So I don't know how familiar you are with Wrinkles. Do you know the story at all?
No, nothing. Never
so
heard
like
of
three,
it.
So like 3 years ago, there was a, like the nation was swept. The U.S. was swept with people dressing up as clowns and like hiding in weird places and just trying to scare the shit out of people. And a lot of that, they say, stemmed from Wrinkles the Clown. And what had happened was these people, there was an internet video that went viral of a little girl sleeping in bed. And she's got like one of those big chest drawers under her bed.
Yeah.
And while she's sleeping, that thing slides open and this really terrifying clown looks out or comes out and is like looking at her and like grabs one of her stuffed animals and smells it and then sets it down next to her like this little teddy bear. And so it drove the fam or the internet crazy. And then these stickers started showing up everywhere that had a picture of this clown and it said Wrinkles and it had a phone number at the bottom. And you could call that phone number. And people started using the phone number to like scare the shit out of their kids. Like you'd call it and it was a real phone number. It would go to this guy and his deal was, well, you know, the parents would tell the kids, well, if you're not good, Wrinkles is going to come get you. And so this guy, this Wrinkles started showing up in different places. And then there were different internet videos and everybody, he talks about getting like 1,000 voicemails a day and text messages. So you got this whole documentary exploring the Wrinkles phenomenon. And the documentary was so cool the way they did it. I don't want to tell you in case you get to see it.
Yeah, I want to see very, it now.
Yeah, but it was very cool how they did the documentary. Because I knew the story just from the news and stuff. But then once you get like an hour into the documentary and you're like, oh, shit. Like, that was really clever what you did there. Like, good job, you guys. I like that.
Okay.
So it's, and you know, clowns are one of the biggest fears, I would say, for a lot of people. As far as the whole population is concerned, nobody really likes clowns. And that one was cool. So I would say, yeah, check it out. Wrinkles okay. The Clown. It's on Hulu over here. Or you don't even get Hulu.
Yeah,
that's right.
But I'll see if it ever comes out over here. We'll probably get it in about a year on some other streaming service.
Right.
But, yeah.
But I wonder now that Disney, you know, owns Hulu, once they take over full control, if they're going to try to expand over into other markets.
Oh, yeah, they might. We'll see. Yeah. We'll have to wait.
Yeah.
Talking about scary clowns, just a quick side note. I just before we started recording, I finished a YouTube video. I found this YouTube channel In Praise of Shadows that does like short documentaries and like video essays on horror movies and horror themes. And he made like an hour and 15 minute video about clowns in horror movies and went through the whole history. Starts with something like really early, and then the last thing he talks about is Terrifier.
And, oh, nice.
Yeah, it's that video is really good, and he talks about all clown movies that ever happened. It's really good.
That's sweet.
So the next one, if I'm just going by when I've watched it, Street Trash was the first after we started recording. The next one was Basket Case from 1982.
Nice.
Which is a movie I've wanted to see for a long time because I've even the Angry Video Game Nerd, James Rolfe, in his video reviews, he talked about it in one of the first of his Monster Madness, where he talks about 31 movies in 31 days on October. And so once he talked about it in that, I wanted to see it since then. It was banned for a long time. And just last week, I found it for $15 in a... at the movie convention I went to, and they I got the box set with all three movies, and I watched the first one, and it is kind of bad, but it's also
I don't know if I've seen two or three.
I haven't either yet, but yeah, there's two more.
Yeah, I've seen the first one a couple of times. Even as a kid, though, I mean, it took me years to finally see Basket Case. But as a kid at the video store, that VHS cover scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Like, it really is. Like, you just got this face and kind of deformed hand peeking out. Like, peeking out from
exactly.
this. this big basket.
And the creature design is amazing. Like that
so good.
That
so
thing.
Good.
He's great. And some of the scenes with him are just really fun. Like he first feeds them by putting like lots of cheeseburgers, just throwing them into the basket.
Right.
And for anyone wondering, it's about a guy who's carrying around a basket with his deformed
Siamese
brother.
Twin. Yeah. His deformed Siamese twin.
Yeah. And it is kind of bad, right? But it's also just so much fun, and the creature effects are amazing, but the acting is not good at all. And
no, it was early 80s, and it's been a little while since I've seen it, but they have like a telepathic link or something, right? They're like connected telepathically. Yeah. And they want to kill the doctor. Or the doctors or that had separated them to begin with.
Yeah, exactly, because they didn't like it. And for the doctors all said, like, if like no normal doctor wanted to do it. And so I think one of them is a veterinarian and the others are normal doctors. And they were like, the dad was even hoping that the twin brother dies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is kind of messed up, but it's also... It's just lots of fun.
It really is. Best Case is a cool one. If you've never seen it, it's weird. Like, it's super weird. And again, I mean, the 80s were a weird time for horror, but I think where the 80s really shines, and, you know, we've talked about a couple of these things already, we'll keep talking about them, is everybody was, excuse me, really experimenting and developing practical effects into a new place. And this one is super cool. You know, this is the same year as The Thing, where you had arguably some of the best practical effects ever done in a horror sci-fi movie.
To this day.
And, yeah, and Basket Case is no different. It's a ton of fun, man. Super cool.
It really is.
All right, so next up, the next couple I got were not very good. I watched 2019's The Car, Road to Revenge. And... I don't know if this is supposed to be some kind of a spiritual successor to the Car movie, the old one from the 70s, the late 70s, mid to late 70s, somewhere in there. So this movie, it sucks. And I don't know if it sucks, though, because of the movie itself, but it... Like the editing and the story, I don't know if it was editing, like some stuff got left out where you couldn't really figure out what was happening. But okay, so the premise, real simplified view, is you have this executive who, or no, he's not an executive, he's a district attorney. And he's finds this microchip that's got all of this data on it. And we see him beforehand buying this brand new car. It's like fresh off the lot, coolest car you could ever get. He's got this girl with him who apparently they dated before. And he tells her, like, hey, I'm going to have you one way or another. And he ends up getting this, all of this information that the bad guys don't want him to have. They find him. There were some cool effects in it. I'll give him that. Like, some of the effects were really well done. But he gets this chip. They end up killing him and throwing him out of this high-rise building. And he lands on top of the car. And somehow his spirit gets into the car. I don't know how. They never explain how he becomes one with this car.
Okay.
And so now, on the flip side of that, you have a mad scientist who has all of these minions that work for him, and he does, like, weird body modifications, like gives them, like, robot arms or a flamethrower arm. And so now the car is going after them while at the same time trying to get this girl back. And it was just bad, man. I mean, it was just a bad movie. I don't know what else to say. It kind of sucks that it was so bad, but it is what it is. There was not a lot to enjoy in this movie. Some of the acting was terrible. The plot, like I said, had huge holes in it.
Sounds enjoyable.
Yeah, just wasn't there, man. Just wasn't there. So. Yeah, that's the car, Road to Revenge. Okay. Just take a pass on it.
Leading from a bad movie to another bad movie, I went to the theater this week and saw Fantasy Island. And I gotta add, I didn't even know it was like based on the TV show. I thought it was just a, a, a movie.
Yeah, and that, I don't know how close it is. Have you ever seen the TV show?
No.
Yeah. The TV show, and the, like, when I saw the trailer for this movie, I, not once did I think of the TV show. Like, nothing made me think of the TV show outside of a very basic premise.
Yeah.
And that was it.
I think that might be the only thing. Is the premise is there's these this group of people are getting to an isolated island called Fantasy Island. I think they won the trip there, and so Michael Peña is the host, the owner. He's called Mr. Ruka, I think, and he is
okay.
He is telling these people, okay, you all won. And you get your fantasy. The only thing is you have to get through your fantasy. You have to play it completely through. And
okay.
Then he gets all these people their fantasy. And of course, they all go terribly wrong. And
as they do.
Yeah. And, you know, the problem is on the one hand, okay, yeah, the fantasies, sometimes fantasies don't, are exactly the way you want them to, of course. But like, there's two brothers. They are the best part about the movie. Wait, let me see who they're played by, because they are really good. They're Ryan Hansen and Jimmy O Yang.
They are
playing two brothers who are just super super funny and like the kind of nerdy guys. And they just wished to have everything.
And okay.
So they are brought right to this big mansion with like lots of partying people, and they are just having the time of their lives. And then their twist is that if you have everything, there's always someone who wants to take it. And
right.
So there's some squad getting in and trying to kill them and get the money. And it's yeah, it's kind of, it doesn't really work in that way, you know. Then Ruka just says, well, it's your, it's probably the owner of the house who wants back in. And I was like, well, okay, that's kind of nuts. And yeah, it's still interesting. There are some things. I'm not completely sad I watched it, but for the most part, I wouldn't tell anyone, go find it.
Yeah, I talked to a good friend of mine, Doug. And he had told me right after he got out from watching it, he's like, I would never tell anyone to go watch it. But he said, it's almost so bad, it's good. And the audience he watched it with was a lot of fun. And that's what made it better.
Yeah, I went with a friend and we sometimes laughed out loud because it was
so bad.
Some things were actually funny, but for the most part, yeah, it was just bad. Yeah. And it's,
oh, that sucks.
It's kind of up on the... Like, it's by director Jeff Wedlow, and it's kind of up on his filmography. He also made Truth or Dare, which was watchable but not really good. True Memoirs of an International Assassin, Kick-Ass 2. Like, it's all these movies that are, yeah, watchable but not really good.
Nothing special.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's... Maybe if you have the right crowd, yeah, it would be more fun, but it's not a good movie.
All right. I didn't plan on... I mean, I'll watch it when it ends up streaming somewhere, but like you said, I'm not going to go find it.
Yeah, okay.
Next up, I've got The Midnight Man from 2016. This
that
popped
sounds
up on...
familiar.
It, maybe once I start talking through it, maybe you'll... it'll jog your memory. And the movie is not a bad movie. It suffered from some really bad acting. And that's the tough part. Some bad acting and some writing where I'm just like, you could have fine-tuned that maybe a little bit more. But you've got this girl who watches over her grandmother who's got dementia. And her grandmother's played by Lynn Shea, who I absolutely just adore. I think she's wonderful. She's amazing. They live in this great, big, huge,
but
old estate.
You got to add, she is amazing, but she also is in everything. Like, if there's a horror
really
movie
is.
And there's an old lady needed, she's in it. She's also in The Grudge.
Was she in the new one?
Yeah.
This also has Robert Englund in it as well. So you've got a couple of big, who, for any, you know, horror fans, know that they were in A Nightmare on Elm Street together, even though they never shared the screen together. Lynn Shea played Nancy's teacher in the original Nightmare on Elm Street. So this movie, though, you've got a girl who watches over her ill grandmother, and her grandmother's really like a bitch throughout this whole thing. Super mean to her and always bossing her around, telling her what to do. But her friend ends up coming over, and they go up to the attic, and they find this game that is called The Midnight Man. And the movie opens. We see a bunch of kids playing this game. I will give them credit. They give you, you know, they set up the monster, what the monster looks like, and some really cool deaths right at the beginning of this thing that were really well done and kind of clever. And so this teenage girl and her best friend start playing this game called The Midnight Man. And I don't know if I would have started playing it. Like, the rules are crazy. Like, you got to wait till the clock strikes midnight. You got to light a candle, cut your finger, write your name on this paper, put your blood next to your name, put the paper on the door, knock on the door 20 times, go outside, blow out your candle, and then come back in. And that's when the game really starts. So between midnight and 3:33, you have to keep your candle lit. You have to keep moving, because if you stop moving, the Midnight Man will find you. And then if your candle goes out, you got to light it within 10 seconds or surround yourself by a circle of salt. And that'll keep the Midnight Man out. And Robert Englund plays Lin Chae's doctor, so he's not the villain in this thing. But the villain is cool. I like the way they made the Midnight Man look. He's like this huge, monstrous, like Slenderman tall type of figure with a crazy, gnarly face. And the rest of the movie is them, you know, trying to fight the Midnight Man. We get one other friend who shows up. And again, the movie itself wasn't bad. I like, you know, a good urban legend type movie. I think they can be a lot of fun. But this one really suffered in that just some of the writing was just not there, and the delivery was pretty poor. And so it really pulls you out of the movie. Okay, yeah. But if you like that kind of a movie, yeah, if you like it, go ahead, check it out. Who knows, maybe you'll like it more than I did.
Okay.
So it's not unwatchable, like you said, not unwatchable, but still not anything I would highly recommend to people.
So watch it if you find it somewhere for free and don't have anything else to do, but don't.
And
like
it's on Netflix right now. So if anybody in the States Netflix, it might be on your Netflix too, I'm unsure.
Gotta check. Maybe I'll watch it, but right now I got other movies that I want to see and need to see before that one. Yeah. So just a question, how many more do you have left? Because I got one.
I only have one more.
Okay.
I only have the one more.
Then I'll put one more in there before we get to the one we both watched.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Because I saw one more and it's really short. It's a short movie from Germany from 1928. And it's called Vormittagsspuk, or the English title is Ghosts Before Breakfast. And it's not really a horror movie, but I wanted to bring it in because it's a ghost movie from 1924 from Germany. And it's basically there was a guy having lots of fun with special effects, and it's basically random household items are sentient and flying around, mostly hats and some things. It's really fun. It's only 6 minutes, and it's not really a horror movie, but it's got Spook, which is like haunting in the title in German, and it's in ghosts in the English title. So it's kind of fun. It's silly stop motion ghost movies for the 20s, you know.
But it's still really cool to see. You know, without that stuff, we wouldn't have everything we have today, the kind of innovators who were trying different things. And we've said it before, if you fucking crazy Germans wouldn't have started World War II, I'm telling you, you'd be a powerhouse in the film industry right now.
Yeah,
because everybody you had who was great left. They ran away to go somewhere else. But you look at the early, you know, especially in the 20s, man, Germany was it. Like, as far as innovation and doing different things with cameras and figuring out effects and stuff like that, Germany really was amazing. But
yeah, for sure. And another one I just want to throw out there, I watched it a few weeks ago in preparation for my side project that I'm working on right now, where I'm researching House of Wax movies. There's a 1924 movie called Waxworks that's from Germany that is also really good and is directed by the guy who made The Man Who Laughs, I think.
And nice.
It's starring like Konrad Veidt, the guy who played The Man Who Laughs, and Werner Krauss, the guy who was Caligari in The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. And it's really good and it's worth watching. And it's on YouTube.
I'll have to check that out. Yeah. Yeah, for sure, so, because all three things you just said are things that I like.
Yeah, oh, both and the names. It's written by the guy who wrote Nosferatu.
Even better.
Yeah.
Nice.
All the powerhouses coming together.
Yeah. Well, that's cool, man. Yeah, I'll have to add it to see if I can check it out. We've got one more, and this is a movie that you had told me just 2 days ago or something like that, 2 or 3 days ago. You're like, I'm watching this movie. It's fucking bonkers. Like, you got to watch this thing. I think you really like it. And so I started watching it last night, but I was still kind of, you know, putzing around the living room trying to get stuff done, and turned it on, but wasn't really paying enough attention. I was like, I want to wait. So I was able to just finish this morning and get through this movie. I don't know how I haven't seen this movie or heard anyone talk about it. If we were to redo our list of movies that are not talked about enough but should be watched, Evil Ed would be on that list.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I wish I would have watched it a bit earlier, because like I bought it like the day before we did the podcast. But yeah, I didn't get to it. And I gotta add here, I bought that because I've heard somewhere, I think on Cinemassacre, the guy who made the Monster Madness, I think he talked about it in some list or something. And so I bought it just because the media book was actually like much on sale. Like, they had it for like $15 instead of 28. And I decided, this looks good, I'll just take it. And it's so worth it.
it's weird because it's from 1995. It's a Swedish movie. It's from 1995, but looks like it's from 1981. Yeah. You know, it has a feel of an 80s movie. And you and I had talked a little bit offline about it. It reminds me of early Peter Jackson.
Yes.
Like, it reminds me of Braindead. It reminds me of Meet the Feebles. You know, what am I forgetting? What was the first one? Bad Taste.
Bad Taste.
It reminds me of all these things. And as I was watching this, I got about a half hour into it. The basic story is you have this guy, Ed, who's a film editor, who gets pulled over to work on this series of popular slasher movies. And
we see a part of a Swedish movie he's editing, and it's like this slow black and white artsy Swedish movie where they're like talking to each other. It's Ingmar Bergman, but maybe even worse, like really slow. Right. And it feels boring from just a few seconds we see. And then
and we did get the guy at the beginning, though. We see somebody in an editing room going crazy. Forgot about that guy. Chopping up a bunch of stuff. So Ed gets pulled over to edit this. I can't remember what the name of those movies were. They had a funny name, though. All of these movies.
The Lose Limbs.
Yes. The Lose Limbs series. And they're on to like the 7th or 8th movie already. And so Ed gets pulled over to do this. And we see scenes from these Lose Limb movies. We get to see sequences, and then it'll pull out and we'll see Ed editing said movie. And slowly, Ed starts to go crazy. And you have this studio executive who's just a real piece of shit, who's always telling him, like, I don't care about what you want to do, Ed. Like, you do what I tell you to do, and that's it. That's it. And I want you to edit all these movies. I'll give you access to my, like, cottage or something like that so you can go edit these things. And the gore is really great. Silly great. That first clip you get of the... And these Loose Limb movies make no sense whatsoever. You have a hooker who shows up in a limo into a parking garage, and this guy is standing there foaming at the mouth. He's like, yeah, I want to see you. Yeah. And really ridiculous ADR throughout this entire movie. But we see him chopping her arm off, and it's, you know, it's old splatter stuff, man. It's just almost like Herschel Gordon Lewis type splatter stuff.
Yeah, and especially that scene, like, so you talked about, like, we get this awesome scene, and then blood splatters everywhere, and he's completely in blood. And then we see afterwards how he edited it, right? And the crazy thing is, I've watched movies that were cut like that.
Right.
The Texas Chainsaw Massacre I sent you, that's a version that is cut like that, where they start at the beginning when it gets gory and cut to the end and just cut everything out.
Yeah, so he cuts this. You see the woman going to take her top off, and then it just cuts to she's dead.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, he was officially they asked him to edit the nudity out because that's the problem. Right. The gore should have stayed in.
Right. And there's even one point where the executive's like, why is the beaver rape scene not in there? And yeah, I'm like, what the
fuck?
Where
is my beaver rape scene?
But this movie, probably 30 minutes into it, I realized that before I even looked it up, I was like, this is a huge fuck you to the censors. Yeah. Like, that's what they're trying to do with this movie. And then I looked at the history of it and some of the trivia, and I was like, oh, 100%. Like, that's what they're doing here is showing that you're censoring things, but the wrong things. And you're over-censoring us, and people don't want to watch these old black and white movies anymore. They want this kind of stuff. So it, the rest of the movie, it just keeps getting weirder and weirder and so much more wild the entire time, throughout the entirety. And I want to say whatever film censor body they had in Sweden at the time was disbanded in 96, from what I read. I just kind of glanced over a few things, and yeah. I'll see if I can find it.
I just read that the censorship there was really horrible because they were they had to cut everything out basically.
Yeah,
And that's why they did it. Yeah, also why.
So
you're
this
looking,
says yeah? the yeah it says the censoring that the Swedish Statens, I don't even know how to say that word. So whatever their the Cinema Bureau of the State is the translation, ran from 1911 to 1996. And the Bureau was dismissed in 2011, being the oldest film censoring organization in the world. Wow. And then the filmmakers of Evil Ed were publicly ridiculed by the head of the Swedish Film Institute on national television. So this guy went on national TV and was like, these guys are fucking assholes.
That is great. By the way, you talked about the ADR and the Loose Limbs Killer, the guy who you just basically talked about with the ADR, was actually voiced by Bill Moseley.
Was it really?
Yeah, that's what the trivia says. I don't know if it really was, but yeah. And it's all throughout the movie, I think it's really fun because it's... it looks so much like they are all Swedish. Like every character is blonde and blue-eyed. Right. And then they all talk English. And at first I didn't fully realize that this wasn't an American production. And then, but I saw the names and realized, okay, no, this is not English.
Right.
And yeah.
And I wonder if, you know, the color, the use of color wasn't a nod to the Italian slasher movies. Like the Argento stuff, because it was all very heavily saturated in blues and reds and oranges. Now that I'm looking, I'm just looking at some of the images right now, and I'm like, oh, shit, it was super colorful.
Yeah, it
like
might
the whole
be.
Thing. And there were so many nods to other horror movies as well. I mean, you get, and I'm coming to get you, Barbara, my favorite creature in this whole thing. And we got to talk about the effects were fucking awesome.
The effects were so great.
So good. So, and that's where I kind of felt like the Meet the Feeble stuff, the Bad Taste stuff. You see some of these great, but, and distorted camera views at the same time.
Yeah.
Almost these kind of wide angle or, you know, a little bit wider, blown up images, fish eyes almost.
And I also liked the demons we see later on. Like they looked amazing, both of them.
The big huge the white demon, the character, I can't remember his name, who was in the insane asylum.
Yeah, exactly. He looked really good.
He looked really good. But my personal favorite was the monster in the refrigerator.
In the fridge, yeah.
Yeah. And he has the same type of look as he almost looks like a mix between a dinosaur and a gremlin. Because the ears are very similar. Even when he opens the fridge, he's like, no, bright light, you know?
Yeah, and at one point he goes like, fuck you.
Right, holds up the middle finger to him. And I think that's where the Peter Jackson stuff comes in. The demon itself reminded me of Legend, Tim Curry's devil in Legend, with the really huge horns and the prosthetic jawbones that stick out, you know, very far from the sides.
Yeah, he looked almost like, I don't know, a Swedish demon that we would see in these like artsy movies.
Right.
I
Ed slowly goes nuts. and commences on to kill everybody, goes to finally finds his family, and he's full on crazy, gonna kill his family. And you have all these tropes that aren't even traditional horror movie tropes, like the military at the end when they show up. You got this leader of the military or SWAT team type group smoking a huge cigar, very
'80s. My favorite thing in the whole movie was probably when in one shot the sergeant of the army actually has no cigar in his mouth and then spits it out from inside his mouth and then has a new cigar in his mouth. That was amazing. That was like a little kick. I actually at first I thought like I saw something wrong, and then I rewinded it and watched it again. And yeah, he has the cigar in his mouth and just spits it out and then has it in his mouth. This movie is amazing.
The whole hospital sequence was so much fun, and the shot when Ed, the main military guy, shoot at each other. So to show the bullets, they're close to them, and then do these super quick zooms out from each character. Like the bullets actually traveling, but we're getting further away from the character while the camera's pointed right at them. Now, this is 100% a must watch. 100% must watch. So I shouldn't say, I don't think this is for everybody.
No.
But it's not for everybody. But if you're a fan of the early Peter Jackson stuff, you'll love it. If you're a fan of like Reanimator, you'll love this. There's so much there. It's a love letter to horror and a fuck you to the censors all at the same time.
Yes, and the gore is, just to reiterate here, the gore is amazing.
It like, really is. The effects are so well done. So well done. Yeah, it's great. And you've got, the guy had a bunch of posters up, like Evil Dead posters. I feel like the people who made this movie were the characters. Those two guys, Nick is the main guy, and then his friend, the other guy.
Yeah.
Like, the guys who made these movies probably were those two guys.
Yeah.
Because even in the screening room, when his girlfriend comes in, she's like, why you watch this all the time? He's like, well, I'm not fucked up or anything. I just enjoy it. It's just fun. And that was the message I feel like they were trying to get to the censors. These movies don't make people crazy. We just enjoy it and have a good time watching it.
Oh,
it's great, man. It's great. Yeah. It really is great.
The director got the idea for this movie because he worked for, like, he was censoring American slasher films for the European market. So he did that job. Yeah.
Which makes sense. I'm going to see if I can buy it on iTunes, because this is one that, I mean, it's on Tubi right now in the States. I don't know if your Tubi is the same as our Tubi.
No, we don't have Tubi anymore since the new European safety thing.
I can buy it for $10. That might have to be my 1,000th movie that I buy on iTunes, is Evil Ed. Yeah. So good, man. So good. So that's... did you have anything else about Evil Ed outside? Just tell everybody, watch it. It's amazing.
No, everybody just watch it. It's amazing.
It really is.
It's the first movie the director made. Like He made a short film in '88 called Winterwärme, but that's
okay.
That's it. He also made Insane in 2010, at least know the title and the cover.
And I'm looking to see, it looks like I could find a VHS copy of Evil Ed 2. That would probably be, a fun one to watch on VHS. Like $30, but that'd still be badass. It was such a fun movie, man.
Yeah.
Man, it was good. It's one that I'm probably going to watch, another time this year, for sure. I want to watch it with Shayna, even though she might be, what the fuck are we watching?
Yeah, I think this is one of those movies where you just want to sit down with as many people as possible and just watch it all together.
Yeah, yeah. It would be a good double feature with Brain Dead.
Yes.
It really would. To watch these two together would be a great double feature. All right, so that is it for what we've been watching lately. The stuff that we've thrown down on our list. We've got a cool episode planned for next week that I'm excited about. We're not going to reveal that, but it's going to be fun. I'm excited because it's a bunch of stuff I haven't seen before.
Yeah.
So I'm stoked to to get in and check some of that stuff out. And if you want to get into contact with us, IHOHpodcast@gmail.com, you can send us an email. And if you do, like you've seen over the past couple of weeks, we'll respond to it and we'll do stuff with it. No matter what it is, we will do something with whatever you send. So please do send a message. And if you don't like using email, it's at IHOHpodcast and all the social medias. You can send a message there as well, just as easily. Do it that way, man.
We're always responding.
Yes. So for the International House Forest Podcast, I've been Joe Merle.
And I've been Josh.
And we'll be back next week with more things terrible, horrible, brutal, bloody, gory, and the macabre.